Alrighty, let's begin our final session. This session is called Grace Under Pressure, and it's a very practical session. It's a chance for people who have experience to pass on their experience to the rest of us. And one of the things that we all have to deal with is the potential for people pointing at us and saying, fascist, racist, monster. How do you deal with that? So the title is Grace Under Pressure, Standing Up to Public Attacks. So I'd like to invite Charles Kraft to come up. Charles Kraft has spoken at our last retreat. But just to give you a little introduction, if you haven't already met him or seen him speak, Charles is a porcelain artist and a painter, and he lives in Seattle. And early this year, the forces of political correctness finally caught up with him. For the better part of a decade, I've known Charles Kraft's work, and I've also known that he's a thought criminal. He's given interviews, there have been blog posts, he's won prizes for writing revisionist essays, and yet it took about 8 years for the art world to finally catch up with him and put two and two together and say, maybe this guy isn't being ironic. maybe this guy's a thought criminal. And so The Stranger, which is one of those alternative weekly papers, material for which is provided by journalists slash barista slash waiter types.
Slash transgendered call girls.
Okay, those two. Yeah, basically what it is it's cultural Marxism in the first half of each issue, and then ads for call girls and massages in the last part. Cultural Marxism and pornography and prostitution. That's their business plan, the typical alternative weekly business plan. Anyway, they went up to Charles. Salon.com took it up. It became a national thing. And all of his friends were like, oh no, it's happening to Charlie. And Charles Kraft stood up to him. He didn't back down. He didn't apologize. He was interviewed. Friends of him denounced him and things like that. It was really inspiring. I wrote a couple pieces about this. I even went and waded in on discussion boards and mixed it up. It was a lot of fun. But Charles didn't back down. So I just want everyone to applaud him right now. So I've said too much about this already. Why don't we begin with Charlie Kraft? Charlie, do you want to tell us about not backing down?
I wasn't really prepared to speak. I'm just going to riff on some notes I took, and I hope it goes quickly because I tend to ramble. The whole thing of my outing, we'll call it, started on Facebook. The Stranger article was a result of an anonymous letter from a psychology teacher at a small college in Washington State who had written me on Facebook in my personal's message box asking why the community hadn't exposed me as a bigot. And the reason why this psychology professor thought I was a bigot is because she mistook the sock puppet of one of my commenters on my Facebook page as me. And the sock puppet was throwing around a lot of rather vile, gutter, anti-Semitic slang, and also racial slurs. So ethnic and racial slurs of the most extreme kind, because this, I know that who the sock puppet was, felt that this was some kind of a way to, I guess, promote the cause. And I wrote back to the psychology professor. I said, number one, that isn't me. I mean, you might think it's me, but it isn't. It's somebody else. Number two, I don't want to censor anybody on my Facebook page. I don't care if they are using the K word or the N word. I just don't want to be monitoring the comments, because I would post things that intrigued me, basically revisionist videos and things like this. And then there would be strings of comments from people. And then this one particular commenter named Elsa, who is actually a male, would get on there and rip everybody a new asshole and use really vile language to do it. And my white nationalist friends, of whom I have maybe a dozen in Seattle, cautioned me about letting this go on. They said, listen, this guy's going to really get you in trouble if you don't block him, her. Well, I didn't do it, and I got in trouble. And I had no idea that the trouble that I got into was going to be international, because I thought what's going to happen is it'll be a local story for this little newspaper that Greg described. And our community is insular, and I didn't think it would go beyond that. I have enough friends up there and have been living there and exhibiting long enough so that I have a certain degree of respect built up over the course of a lifetime. And I'm in the museum, and I used to be a journalist in an art paper, so I'm also a bit of a critic. I'm a curator. I put together shows in Seattle that were popular with people. So I'm an eccentric, so I'm sort of like a character on the art scene, and kids look up to me because I've been at it all my life, and they're starting out, and they want to know how do you survive without a day job. That's the big thing. So the psychology professor wrote the anonymous note to the art critic. The art critic wrote to me and said, you've been accused of being a Holocaust denier. Would you like to say something about that? And I wrote back to the critic. I said, well, this is a no-win situation. I don't want to say anything about it. That was it. And she wrote back, and I had written a paper about the Holocaust in Romania, which was kind of academic. I said, this is the only thing I've ever written about the Holocaust. Here it is. You read it. You tell me. If you think I'm a Holocaust denier, fine. But I don't want to make I don't want to comment on this. That she wrote me back and said, well, okay, fine, that fair enough. That was the quote, fair enough. If you don't want to comment, no comment, that's fine. It won't be pursued, which I thought was okay, and I let it go with that. 8 months later, I got a letter back from the critic. I'm on my way to Asia. I'm in Asia, actually. I'm in India. She's saying, I've been tracking you on the internet. You've got your name and at these various white nationalists. They don't use the word white nationalist. They call it white supremacism. At white supremacist websites, you've got your name there. You're all over the Holocaust revisionist blogs with your comments. I have some questions I want you to answer. You can either answer these questions or you can refuse to answer them again. But whatever you do, I'm going to write about you, and essentially, you're going to be outed by me. There were 7 questions she asked, which I answered, and I'm a fairly honest person. I don't like to play these Jewish games where you're always strategizing with your enemy, trying to outsmart them. I'm just a kind of a dumb ox, you know? I mean, I know what I think the truth is, and rather than protect it with a bunch of weasel words or corkscrew logic or pill pool, as they call it, I'm just going to take my medicine like I used to do with my dad when he was mad at me. Just, it'll be over in a while, I always tell myself. So she went ahead and wrote this article, and I'm a white nationalist, which, God bless her, she didn't say supremacist, but and a Holocaust denier. Well, of course, that's the worst thing in the world to be in the art sphere, which is totally cultural Marxist. There are very few people like me. And at this little kind of minor level of celebrityhood that I achieved in the world of the crafts. And I thought, like I said, it would be over and I can get on with my life. Well, Christ, the Huffington Post picked it up immediately, and then somebody else at the Huffington Post had to chime in. So I got 2 Huffington Post articles excoriating me. Once it was in the Huffington Post, it went to the Guardian UK in England. They had a poll there. Should my art be taken out of museums? You vote yes or you vote no. Vice magazine, which is supposed to be so edgy, they called me up and interviewed me. And then after I was interviewed, completely smeared me. It was just misquoted me, made me look like a crackpot, and generally left me sort of in the dust as a hateful person. You know, the thing is, it's hate that they want to make you into a hater. Then the New Yorker called, and it's this Jewish young reporter who writes about culture and the arts for their blog. It's not the print edition of the New Yorker, it's their blog. And she wanted to interview me. I thought, okay, fine. I give her two hours of talking about what I do and my career. That's fine. The New Yorker piece was kind of okay because they asked a question. I can't remember exactly what the question was. Oh, the question always is, should we censor this man? Should the museums that have bought his work get rid of them now? It's kind of the, and can artists who are like me, haters, should they be allowed to participate in the cultural sphere? And when you go to the comments at these places, it's amazing to see how much and how many people think that this is extremely dangerous to have an artist with ideas like mine. And then and they want to censor you. And then not only do they want that to happen to you, but at the same time, they don't even know you, but they want to kick you while you're down with some. They just make up things about you. It's amazing. People came out of the woodwork and started telling stories about me that had never happened. They claim it. They've been at that I've been mean to homosexuals. Had nothing to do with this issue. They claimed all kinds of. They put words in my mouth in some of these articles. There were 72 of them, by the way, at last count. Big mainstream places and then small blogs. And I got defended by Greg and I got defended by some other people, but the defense was nowhere near as copious as this excoriation, this public auto de fe that I had to go through. The result has been, I was elevated from a regional and kind of small-time national fame. My fame went way up into the international sphere. I've never been more famous than I am now as a result of this. I was really a small-time guy, but they made me look like I'm the king of ceramics, American ceramics. And look at him; he's a Nazi, and we're going to take him down. So. Now I'm as a result of the attention I got, my celebrity rating went spiked way up. Business-wise, I attracted some new audience of people that are Jew-wise, people that are leaning towards white nationalism, people that are on the right who hadn't heard of me before, and I guess they think that it would be a good idea to support me because they can consider what I do now a bit of a crusade and a losing battle. So there's that. My audience doesn't have a lot of money and never did. I sell to young people and kept my prices down so that they can, if they have any discretionary income that they want to spend on art, they can afford my pieces. So it's not like you spend a lot of money on my work. It's a couple $100, you can have something by me. And the kids used to love it because it's edgy and they like guns and I make guns. And I comment on their culture because I'm kind of in tune with it because I'm respected by this another generation of creative people that are sharing with their interests and their heroes with me. So I haven't been left behind because I'm as old as I am. I've sort of been brought into a new generation of art makers as a senior, as a respected senior with this kind of edginess. That's nice. On the notes that I took for myself about explaining what goes on when you get smeared like this is the worst thing that happens to you is the immediate family. Suddenly you're in the newspaper. I was on the cover of the Seattle Times, as a Holocaust denier. The Sunday paper, there I am in my studio with a bunch of Hitler teapots behind me. With the editorializing that went on, it's just, this guy doesn't believe in the Holocaust. And of course I believe in the Holocaust, but you can't, with this kind of attention, nobody's going to wait for you to split hairs, you know? It's just, the charge has to be lobbed at you, and it sticks the way it is, denier. And when they read denier, that means you deny the whole Holocaust. It makes you look silly, because I don't deny the Holocaust. I have some skepticism about some of the received history of the Holocaust, but nobody wants to hear you say that, especially the people that are reporting about it, are reporting about you being a Holocaust denier, because they're hooking, they need a hook to hang their story on. The hook is the scandalous nature of your thought crime, and then there it goes. So you're stuck with, now I'm stuck with a picture of me on the cover of the city paper, and it's, Thanksgiving is coming, and my brother, I usually spend it with my brother and his wife and my two nieces. Well, one of the nieces is engaged to a Jewish person, and the Jewish family of the niece is coming for Thanksgiving, and so I'm not invited that year. It's like, I don't have a place at the Thanksgiving dinner table, because my brother and his wife are worried that something untoward is going to come out of my mouth when the issue of this me being on the front page of the paper comes up. So that's kind of, it hurts, is what I want you to know. When your family starts to think about leaving you out of family situations because of this political stuff that you're into, I mean, it's painful. I can't tell you that it didn't hurt my feelings not to be able to go to Thanksgiving every year. I mean, I'm 65. If it wasn't with my mom and dad, it's with the rest of the family that's alive. I mean, we celebrated together, but they were worried I was going to start bringing out the, you know, Holocaust statistics in front of these middle-class Jews from this bedroom community that my niece is marrying into. And so that's kind of a metaphor for the rest of the trouble I've had with friends turning against me, letters I got from people that I had known through the course of my life that wanted to put in writing how disgusted they were with my politics and my attitude. I mean, they sign off on this stuff, and you get it in the mail, and you open it up, and it's somebody that you haven't seen for a few years, somebody you thought was your friend, and they're divorcing themselves from you. They don't want to have anything to do with you anymore. I tried to answer some of these letters. There weren't a lot of them. There was about three, and I just thought, I'm not, and then when you're reading comments about yourself in some of these blogs, you want to get in there and answer. I told myself, stay out of the fray. Don't waste your time trying to educate anybody. Allow yourself to be interviewed by anyone that is coming along that wants to interview you. NPR called me up, by the way, Studio 108. That went out around the nation on about 4 o'clock commuter, you know, traffic everywhere, where all the NPR listeners are tuned into their those stations in their various cities. That nothing but cultural Marxism comes out of NPR. I mean, it's NPR. I just call it JuPR. It's I know it's kind of crass to say this, but top to bottom, if you the executives to the announcers. And to all the people in the field that are reporting from different parts of the world, they're all, it's Jewish, and it's a Jewish agenda. And this Holocaust thing really upset this one guy, and he suggested on his program that I needed a psychiatrist. So I just said yes to everybody. I didn't care who it was. If you're on the right, if you're Harold Covington in the National Front, he wants to get an interview from me, fine, Harold, I'll come up and talk on your Nazi radio station. I don't care. Fine, NPR, you want to hear what I think? I'll be on your radio station. So I did this for 2 months. Finally, the local Jewish newspaper in my city, one of the reporters called me, and she wanted to get a scoop. And by that time, I was really tired of talking about this issue. And I said, before I deign to give you a scoop, I said, all you people have done is just get me to talk so that you can put me up on, so that you can hang me. I mean, you want me to create the rope that you're going to use to hang me. And I said, I will give you an interview, but before I give you the interview, would you please watch these two videos? And this woman would refuse to watch the videos, and so I didn't give her an interview. It's a class. It's the chattering class. They have some sort of social status, and they have some sort of expertise, I guess, and social dialogue, and they think that you're going to have to drop everything you're doing so that they can have their story, which is always going to be negative unless it's a little countercurrents radio show like at Greg runs. So I just told her, I mean, essentially, I said, fuck you, you know? I mean, I'm not going to sit down and do this for anybody else because I know that you're going to hang me. And furthermore, you didn't bother to even go to these URLs I asked you to do your homework. I mean, come on, do some homework before you lob these charges at me. And she wouldn't do it, so I wouldn't give her the interview. And that's the way I'm going to be with everybody else that comes down the pike now. The story's over, by the way. These things only last 3 months max. Then they get on to somebody else. You can go back to your life, but it's changed forever because you got the family, you got the girlfriend, you got the wife, and you got the people in your neighborhood that have been notified that you're some persona non gratis. You're a moral leper, and you got to deal with this. You go into the supermarket. I went to some place to get a dinner that the damn waiter wanted to talk to me about. You know what I thought. And he's an Antifa. I mean, you know, he's out on the barricades with these balaclavaed Marxist thugs busting up David Irving lectures, for God's sakes. And he wants to, you know, get in there and needle me while I'm having my dinner. And that's what you can expect if you get smeared by the media. I mean, it's not... You could stand up to it, yes. I mean, because I don't know where... You turn a point in your life, you cannot go back. I mean, reading Kevin MacDonald's The Culture of Critique, I mean, I turned a corner. There's no possible way I can undo what I learned from that book. So I just have, like I said, my dad used to beat me, not harshly, but I deserved it. And I would tell myself, the beating will be over soon. And then everything will be okay. And Dad and I can go to the ball game again and go fishing. I just have to get through this one. So that's my attitude. It'll when you're thinking thoughts like we think, and if you're being public about it, you're going to attract attention. Somebody's going to get it, a burr in their bonnet, you know, be in their bonnet, and go after you. Hopefully it's not going to be a violent attack, because that does happen if you're out on the barricades. With intellectuals like us, we can just expect these smears and this hubris from these people that are supposed to be educated. It's beyond belief, you people. I mean, college-educated citizens, you know, good citizens, they have been brainwashed to the point where this is a religion with them. They actually think they've lived through the Holocaust. They've seen so many damn Holocaust TV shows. And they'll bring it up, you know, well, what about? Well, I said, well, excuse me, but that was a movie starring Kirk Douglas. So I would say that I'll pass the microphone on to somebody else, but the most hurtful thing about having your reputation attacked and destroyed, kind of, you know. It's not really destroyed, but you have to put up with this. It's this family thing. And I was talking with Kevin MacDonald last night about how painful it is. I think if it happens to any of you here in this room that are worried about it, just call me up and I'll help you through it.